when it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Coming up on DTNS, Facebook wants to hire thousands of Europeans to create the metaverse, whatever it turns out to be. Foxconn wants to build you a car, and Apple announces new M1 chips and MacBook Pros for them to go inside. This is the Daily Tech News for Monday, October 18th, 2021 in Los Angeles. I'm Tom Merritt.
From lovely Cleveland, I'm Rich Straffolino.
I'm the show's producer, Roger Chang.
Oh, and it's an Apple announcement day, which means we have Nika Monford with us. Hey, Nika.
Hello, hello. Glad to be here. Glad to talk some Apple announcement.
And of course, Nika, one of the hosts of the SnobOS podcast, the other one, Terrence Gaines, a.k.a. Brother Tech. Welcome back, Terrence.
How's everybody going out there?
We're doing good. We're doing good. We were just having a good conversation about what laptops we may or may not have bought already, the chips that go inside them. If you want that wider conversation, Roger was doing a really good explanation of the RAM and the bandwidth effects and the chips. Get our expanded show, Good Day Internet. Become a member at patreon.com/DTNS.
Yes, you can join other top patrons like Tony Glass, Philip Less, and Daniel Dorado.
Let's start with a few tech things you should know.
A joint cybersecurity advisory from the FBI, NSA, CISA, and the EPA disclosed that in March, July, and August, seemingly unrelated ransomware organizations hit water and waste treatment facilities in Nevada, Maine, and California, respectively. Got all that? These attacks led to file encryption at all sites, with one facility seeing a SCADA industrial equipment computer corrupted. The advisory cautioned this does not represent an uptick in cyber activity against the water system.
Following Reuters' report on Amazon's program of copying products in India, a bipartisan group of five members of the U.S. House Judiciary Committee sent a letter to Amazon CEO Andy Jassy accusing Amazon of misleading or possibly even lying to Congress about Amazon's business practices. Amazon now has until November 1st to provide a sworn response to clarify how it uses seller data to develop its own products and requests all documents mentioned in the Reuters investigation.
The Tor sites belonging to the Revil ransomware operation went offline, with Revil posting on the forum XSS it had its domains hijacked. The post said there was no sign of compromise to Revil servers, but that it was had to shut down operations anyway. Current Revil affiliates were told to contact the operators over the messaging app Tox for campaign decryption keys. Customer service.
Yeah, no, look at that. The automaker Stellantis and LG Energy Solution announced a joint venture to produce EV battery cells in North America. This would see a new battery factory built and operating by Q1 2024 with an annual capacity of 40 gigawatt hours, roughly on par with the Panasonic Tesla Gigafactory that's over there in Sparks, Nevada. No word on a specific location for this new one, but construction should start in Q2 2022. And in related new Toyota news, Toyota announced it would invest $3.4 billion in battery development and production in the U.S. through the end of the decade. That includes $1.3 billion electric vehicle battery plant expected to begin production in 2025 and further expanding in 2031. Expected watt-hour production and the location of that factory are not yet known.
The Wall Street Journal reported Sunday that Facebook internal documents say that 2 years ago, Facebook reduced the number of internal reviewers focused on hate speech complaints. The documents also appear to show that Facebook made other adjustments that reduced the number of complaints, making it appear that its algorithms were more successful at removing hate speech than it actually was. The document showed algorithms actually removed between 3 and 5% of hate speech views. Monday, Facebook Vice President of Integrity Guy Rosen says the company doesn't focus on hate speech's existence, but how often it's seen. He wrote that for every 10,000 views of a piece of content on Facebook, 5 reviews of hate speech, and that the prevalence had dropped 50% over the past 3 years.
Okay. Well, we got more Facebook news to go with that. So before we start talking about it, tell us what that is, Rich.
Yeah, so the metaverse, you know, we kind of teased at the start of the show. It's just a buzzword for now. It means kind of whatever you want it to mean. But for Facebook, it means it's a way to inhabit a shared virtual world that it hopes to see realized in 10 to 15 years. To that end, it announced it will hire 10,000 people in Europe to help build the metaverse. A recruiting drive will take place across Europe, including France, Germany, Ireland, Italy, the Netherlands, Poland, and Spain. Facebook has already built out an AI research in Europe, including a reality lab in Cork, a research lab in France, and a partnership with the Technical University of Munich on an AI ethics research center. So, culling the Europeans to build the metaverse, what could go wrong here? Yeah.
Bloomberg has a really good explanation of what the metaverse is and is not, because there isn't a definition. There's lots of definitions. And it feels like Facebook is championing this to kind of deflect and say, yeah, but we're future focused. We're building the future. My guess is they were going to hire about 10,000 AI experts in Europe anyway. Terrence, do you feel any differently about that?
Well, I'm just trying to figure out, is just metaverse just another word for virtual reality, or is there something more involved?
Sure. Yes and no. Like it's whatever they want it to be, right? I mean, I get the idea of the metaverse, which is, Neal Stephenson's Cryptonomicon, Neal Stephenson's Snow Crash, the ability to like have a virtual avatar that's like the real world, but it all takes place over connected, you know, internet connected devices, etc. I mean, I get that, but what it actually ends up being or not, I mean, nobody really knows yet.
Well, and that's what kind of makes it, you know, putting it 10 to 15 years out, Facebook can, at that time, take that time, 10,000 people, they can do a lot of work clearly with that. And, you know, and kind of at the end of 10 to 15 years, kind of rubber stamp whatever they have as the metaverse, said, we did it, you guys, no problem, we got it. What I do think is interesting, though, is Facebook is very quick to kind of couch this as, listen, we want to create this just like the early internet was. This needs to be open. This needs to be collaborative. It's not just a Facebook thing. We need collaboration from different companies, developers. So not making it seem like this monolithic social network is creating this monolithic VR, you know, walled garden, for lack of a better term, and that this is something somehow different from that. Now, you know, current the first stabs at the metaverse kind of have been very Oculus VR focused. Yes, they have integration with third party companies like Zoom and stuff like that, which is, you know, key, I guess, for kind of expanding that. You know, we will see how much those bona fides actually play out, though.
Nika, are you excited for the metaverse?
I don't know. I'm always a bit skeptical, especially lately when it comes to Facebook, and who knows what space we're going to be in the next 10 to 15 years. So it always is kind of one of those things that I kind of, you know, couch in the back of my mind of, okay, it sounds kind of cool now, but what is this really going to look like in 10 to 15 years? How much more power is Facebook going to amass over the next 10 to 15 years? And if they're saying, you know, we're open sourcing it, it's not just a Facebook thing, yeah, you can say that, but how proprietary if you bring in other developers or other people outsource? Are you going to try and claim ownership of that? Is that still going to fall into the, you know, Facebook ecosystem of Instagram, WhatsApp, or whatever else they could be building, you know, behind the scenes that they haven't announced yet? So I take it all, honestly, quite skeptically. And I'll just kind of have to see, you know, how it plays out, because I'm not so sure.
Ask AOL and CompuServe how well their plans were 10 to 15 years later. I'm just saying, like, I'm not saying the metaverse is dumb or that it won't happen. I think it's great, and I think it will. And I'm not 100% certain that Facebook is the one that's going to make it happen. They certainly will contribute in the early days, but there's a lot of time left before we know for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. Well, our next story here, Foxconn is a company that's known for assembling Apple products and more, announced three electric vehicle prototypes that it's building. The cars were developed under the Foxconn brand in cooperation with Taiwan's Yulon Motor Company, which also makes Nissan and Mitsubishi vehicles. The new EVs are sedans called the Model E, an SUV called the Model C, and a transit bus called, wait for it, the Model T. All the vehicles use Foxconn's MIH consortium open software and hardware platform. The prototypes are meant to serve as a reference design for EV brands to use to make their own cars. So some details here. The sedan was designed by Pininfarina, as a luxury model with 750 horsepower and delivers a 0 to 62 mile per hour time of 2.8 seconds, aka fast, along with a 750 kilometer range. The SUV will do 0 to 62 in 3.8 seconds and cost around $35,700. Yulon will make a version available in Taiwan by 2023, and the bus will hit a top speed of 75 miles per hour with a range of 400 kilometers and include tech for things like pedestrian warnings, advanced temperature management, and high crashworthiness, meaning in the event of a crash, there'll be fewer injuries as a result. The bus is supposed to be on the road as early as next year. Foxconn plans to build plants to make the vehicles near where they are sold. It hopes to announce European plants soon. It plans to build some in the U.S. as well, including acquiring a plant in Lordstown, Ohio, where it will build Fisker EVs by late 2023. They're going to be doing that after. They're also going to be building the Lordstown electric truck there, or Lordstown Motors electric truck there as well. But, you know, certainly good news and kind of in my neck of the woods for that plant to be seeing some continued usage. But Foxconn cars, kind of an interesting new direction for, you know, a company we think of making consumer electronics.
We all have Foxconn phones. They're just called iPhones.
We just don't know it. Yeah.
Right. So, you know, I think this is incredibly smart of Foxconn to be like, hey, you know what we're good at? Working with clients to create efficient, high quality products. It's been consumer electronics for the most part up until now, but it could also be cars. And so again, they've got that Foxtron brand, but I wouldn't expect to see a lot of Foxtron dealerships showing up on Van Nuys Boulevard in Los Angeles anytime soon. I'm guessing this is their way of saying, hey, you want to get into the car building business? Maybe Apple, maybe somebody else, you know, we are here to help you do that.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to think, you know, because we're all still up in the air as far as what Apple's going to do. Are they going to make their own? Are they going to partner with somebody? Foxconn maybe putting it out there is like, look, we're going to do these trial runs with Taiwan, and we're going to do trial runs with this Pininfarina, whatever the name of that was. But this is a trial run. So when Apple is ready to play ball, we'll let them know that we can get up and running with even plants in America.
Yeah, but I guess it was made by Foxconn in the future, except maybe by, there may be like an Intel inside marketing thing of like, it's built on the Foxtron platform. And so, you know it's quality when you see that Foxtron sticker on whatever car you're making.
I do wonder, though, this is definitely a big pivot for Foxconn. Like, I don't want to under or sell that, or like a new market for them for sure. But also, I feel like this is a little bit of a reflection of kind of the consumer electronification of cars that we've kind of maybe even in just perception as like cars as tech platforms. That's kind of become the standard for how they're developed. You know, Tesla kind of paved that route. And the fact that they are partnering and they're doing this with an established, someone that's been making cars with major global brands in Yulon Motors, I think that smooths over a lot of the, hey, we focus on this consumer electronic stuff, and yeah, we don't know anything about making cars. How are we going to do this? Whereas with that partnership, they have all of that, this huge amount of industrial production and technical expertise, and combined with, you know, someone that has automotive manufacturing know-how. You know, I definitely don't think it's anything to take lightly. And if they can, you know, provide, you know, kind of this platform to build on for smaller companies like Fisker or something like that, that could be a huge way to jumpstart different electric car brands very quickly.
And I think they're just catching on the wave. I mean, pretty much every major car brand is coming out with a line of EVs, some shifting to trying to fully have their full fleet as an EV. So I think they are just trying to hedge their bets to say, hey, we want to get in this game because we see where it's going. What's the best way for us to leverage what we do to get in on some of that action?
Yeah. And they can bring down the cost for other auto manufacturers, you know, for the Fords and the Hyundais of the world. Although I know transport and transit begins with a T in a lot of languages, but really Model T for your bus? Like, I feel like
are you saying there's a car company that would have an issue with that, Tom?
I don't know. Well, historians will have a problem.
No, a little confusion there.
Yeah. We are going to talk about the new Apple products, but real quick, if you're interested in the culinary art that is barbecue, but not sure where to start, and you're a tech fan, which you obviously are because you're here, you need to listen to Barbecue and Tech, SMR podcast. Chris Ashley and Rod Simmons coming out with a podcast that dives into the techniques and technology that will grow your barbecue skills, whether you're a novice or a seasoned pro. That's Barbecue Tech. First episode is out now. Find it and subscribe. BBQandTech.com. That's BBQandTech.com. Go do it now.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
The Claude 3 model family from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point on the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed. And Haiku is the fastest and lowest cost model in the market, perfectly designed for high volume, high speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who trust Anthropic to keep them at the frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude today.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
So Apple announced some stuff. You may have heard about it. We're going to run through some of it and get to the laptops at the end. First, lightning round on the early announcements. Apple Music announced a new bargain plan below the other two plans. There's the single plan and the family plan, called the Voice Plan. For $4.99 a month in 17 countries later this year, you'll be able to get a cheaper version of Apple Music that, what they say, will only work with Siri. So it would be voice control. I can't imagine that's actually like literally true. There's got to be some ways you can interact with it with text or something. But the idea is you don't get to manipulate it. You don't get the higher audio quality. You just say things like, help me relax, or play some dinner vibes, or play a song. And then Siri will curate the music for you, so to speak.
Well, I guess it's the popularity will only be how good Apple is in curating the music, right? Spotify is good at that. Some of these other, well, Spotify
Pandora, is really good pretty at good.
Playlists. If the playlists are not so good, then what's the point? So we got to really see. That's the determining factor for me anyway.
I'm actually excited by this because, one, I feel like this is a swipe almost at like satellite radio. You could pay $5 and have streaming in your car, even if you don't want to have this overall thing. $5 a month, very inexpensive. And it's also Amazon Music also offers basically it's like a tethered to one Echo device kind of streaming music service exactly like this, but this works across all, anywhere you have Siri, a lot more utility for roughly the same. I don't know exactly what the price of it, but it's very low. So they're not the only ones thinking along these lines. So I think it's an interesting move.
It's an interesting move. As Terrence mentioned, I'm a little concerned about what the playlist is going to look like. I know on Apple Fitness Plus, some of the playlists are interesting. So I don't know if they have the full, you know, backing of Apple Music's, you know, library to pull from, or if it's a bit more curated, similar to Apple Fitness Plus.
Yeah, it is able to pull out of the whole library. That is that okay. They did say that in the announcement. So yeah, it shouldn't be limited by the same problems. But yeah, you know what? Rich, you may be right. These may be meant for people who buy the new HomePod minis. And by new, I mean new colors, yellow, orange, and blue, available in November. So there you go. That happened too. Also got new AirPods, third-gen AirPods with spatial audio, the force sensor, not tapping, kind of like the Pros, sweat and water resistant, new low distortion driver that can handle better at the low and the high ends, adaptive EQ, also like the Pro. 6 hours of listening on a charge, 5-minute charge gets you an hour of listening, so some fast charging, 30 hours from the case, MagSafe and wireless charging in the case. I mean, basically, these are AirPod Pros, but without the custom tips on the end, and they're cheaper, $179. You can order them now, ship in next week. The second-gen AirPods will stay in the channel at $129, so you'll have three models, AirPods Pro at the top, then AirPod third gen and the original AirPods. I guess it's if you want all the AirPod Pro features and you're willing to give up that custom tip and save a little money, is that who this is for?
Well, so they're offering maybe just a little bit more because the AirPods Pro do not have MagSafe charging. They just have the wireless charging. Mm-hmm. So if I was trying to do some math here, it's like, okay, well, how do I keep my AirPod Pros but still get the MagSafe? Is there a case, a MagSafe case available that I can buy separately? Or do I have to buy the new AirPod Pros and, you know, with the MagSafe? But in addition to just the custom tips, what the AirPod 3 does not have is the active noise cancellation, which is what the custom soft silicone tips provide you, is the suction to get the noise cancellation. So that's probably the major differentiator. You know, AirPods 3, no noise cancellation. AirPods Pro, active noise cancellation. And then everything else is kind of like, well, you know, price.
My question is, will these pass the lawn mowing test? Can I wear these, blow on my lawn without having to like crank up the volume? My humble Galaxy Buds, no active noise cancellation, but they have that firm fit. Mm-hmm. Does it like a charm? OG AirPods doesn't work. So if the adaptive EQ, they could do something with that low distortion driver, you know, maybe. But to me, that fit is pretty important.
Or get you an electric mower, which is what I got recently.
Oh, yeah, that's definitely, yeah.
And the volume is way less on the electric mower.
And I think these are probably being marketed more towards people who are on either maybe the first or second gen AirPods who maybe want to upgrade to the shorter tip, shorter case. But for me, for the Pros, it's the noise canceling, which is that's the key thing. So
yeah, you're all right. It's the noise cancellation that's the reason to get the Pros. That makes perfect sense. All right, let's get to the laptops. We'll start with the chips. Two new chips. There's the M1 Pro and the M1 Max. The M1 Pro has 200 gigabyte per second memory bandwidth, up to 32 gigabytes of unified memory that works across the entire SoC, 33.7 billion transistors, a 10-core CPU, that's 8 high-performance cores and 2 efficiency cores that they say is 70% faster than the M1, 16-core GPU on the M1 Pro, that's twice as fast as the M1. It can do ProRes acceleration in its new media engine, can handle additional Thunderbolt controllers and display engine, too, that can support multiple displays. We'll get into more of that when we talk about the laptops. And then there's the M1 Max, which basically adds more GPUs and a little more memory bandwidth. 400 gigabyte per second memory bandwidth, twice what the M1 Pro has. The M1 Max can go up to 64 gigabytes of unified memory, 57 billion transistors, same 10-core CPU, 8 high-performance, 2 efficiency, but up to 32-core GPU. They say it's 4 times faster at graphics than the M1, and the media engine has twice the video encoding. Not as power efficient as the M1. They did a lot of graphs putting it in between the M1 and other unidentified PC chips. As Dieter Bohn said on the Verge live blog, I believe Apple is outperforming integrated graphics on Intel machines, but if Apple is this confident, it really shouldn't be afraid to show real numbers instead of those kind of like very relative graphs. 3 times faster Core ML than Intel Core i9 Max, though. There were a few hard numbers in there. And it felt like they were really positioning these chips at video editors. Final Cut Pro, 5 times faster for some video function. ProRes transcodes 10 times faster in compressor. Before we get to the actual laptops and the form factors that these chips are in, what are your impressions of the chips so far?
My first thought is that this is a very GPU way to scale your chip design, or it's an approach to GPU design as opposed to, we're not going to have the hero SoC that we're going to pare down and cut parts off, and we're going to band the silicon wafers as they come off and dice them up and stuff like that. It's an additive, I guess, approach to kind of chip design that they're taking here and relying on these ultra fast memory connections to kind of support passing information between the two, which they're able to do very well because it's an SoC and everything's kind of integrated all together. There's less physical distance to have to send it to GPUs and stuff like that. So that to me was the kind of answer to that question. I think we assumed that was going to be the case with how they would scale the M1 stuff, but interesting to see that go through as well. And as Roger pointed out, AMD, before the show, we were kind of talking about this. AMD has kind of paved this path with a lot of their Threadripper stuff, where it's this chiplet kind of design of super fast interconnects, lets you scale lots of cores very quickly. Now this is on an SoC. So the only question is, I guess, for those ultra, ultra high end workloads, the M1, by all accounts, performed very well across a variety of tasks, outperforming, Intel on a broad spectrum. There were certainly cases where it fell down or not as good on a broad spectrum of kind of activities, looking good. But, on those ultra high end stuff, that 32 core, it's still an integrated GPU. They were showing about a 30 watt TDP on this, at least according to those vague, murky graphs. So that would be my only question. But I'm assuming, that Apple's confident with what they have.
Yeah, so I think they were really trying to show it was relative with these graphs, how so far down, the performance is as compared to the original M1, to the new M1 Pro and the M1 Max, just to kind of give, people a visual, just to give you a quick visual view of how far below the standard that Apple has set with their three chips.
Terrence, you got anything else to add to the chips?
Oh, well, I'm not a chip guy, but I definitely say that was one of the reasons why I was looking at getting a new Mac, because of this new chip, because I've got an older Intel i7 processor, and I don't know if you can hear it, but like I said, my fan is screaming now, so I'm definitely hoping, getting an M1 Pro will definitely solve all my issues. And like you said, we'll get into the pros and the cons of the Macs later, because a lot of people had some issues with these new Macs that we'll probably get into a little bit later.
That's right, Terrence. I can hear you over my fans as well, which is why I also will be getting a new one. All right, let's talk about it. MacBook Pro 14 and 16 inches. They had the raised feet that people were talking about. They have the physical keys replacing the touch bar, and they brought new ports. They're not new, they're old ports, but they brought them back. On the right side, you get the HDMI port. You get a Thunderbolt 4 port with USB-C Thunderbolt 4 port, and you get an SD card slot. Left side, headphone jack, which has some improvements to what it could do. That was there already. 2 more Thunderbolt 4/USB-C ports, and then a MagSafe 3 power slot that you can do. You're bringing back the old MagSafe power cord. You can still charge over the Thunderbolt ports, though. If you've got one of the USB-C power supplies and you want to use that instead, you can take up one of your Thunderbolt 4 USB-C ports with that if you want. The 14-inch can power two Pro Display XDRs, or actually not the 14-inch, the M1 Pro chip can power two Pro Display XDRs, and the M1 Max can do three displays and a 4K TV. It has a 24% thinner border. The top border is 60% thinner, and I believe this may be one of the things Terrence was alluding to earlier. There's a notch for a 1080p camera. They did not add Face ID, even though that notch is nice and wide. The menu bar is what will be up there next to the notch and wraps around the notch. Basically, the notch just interrupts the menu bar. The display can do 120 hertz ProMotion refresh rates. These are mini LED screens. The solid state drive has 7.4 gigabit per second read rates, twice as fast as the prior gen. Battery life is 17-hour video playback for the 14-inch, 21 hours for the 16-inch. They can fast charge up to 50% of the battery capacity in a half an hour, and the 14-inch starts at $1,999, call it $2,000. 16-inch starts at $2,500. Those can go all the way up to $6,099, $6,100 if you max out the specs. Ordering started already. You can order them right now. The first ones were available next week, although I'm guessing the shipping dates have started to slip already, and they're available in silver and space gray. So that notch, Terrence, I saw you nodding there. Does it bug you?
No, it does not bug me, but I see a lot of people. Battery life, who cares? You know, new chips, yeah, whatever. You know, all these other, you know, features, but it's like the notch really has been a divider for people. When I mean people, the small amount of people in my Twitterverse, right?
The very small, loud people on Twitter. Yeah, yeah.
Right. The very loud people on Twitter, right? But yeah, that seemed like a big deal. But again, like I said, you know, a lot of the issues were with the actual physical parts, like I said, with the notch and the actual ports. You know, a lot of people were like, hooray for the ports. Touch bar went away. Everybody said thank God for that, which I'm kind of bummed. I actually used my touch bar. I actually found it very let me not say integral, because that means that I like,
they're gonna come for you.
I don't really use it, but I do use it, especially when I'm like, you know, doing light video editing with Final Cut. So, you know, I'm a little bummed about that. But like you mentioned, people are really bummed out about that notch.
Here's my prediction. Whenever the teardown happens next week or something like that, there will be the Apple has space for touch or for Face ID sensor in notch in a new MacBook Pro. I may be wrong. That is my prediction. I think any ill will of the notch, and Apple kind of got in front of it, but it's like, hey, if you enable dark mode, you can barely see it. Hey, guys, you know. But I think all of that is forgiven by, like, just the fact that there are ports on this thing and you don't have to live hashtag dongle life as much anymore. The one thing that really shows that, like, Apple listened to, I guess, professionals or something like that. Apple 5 years ago puts an XQD card reader in there because that's the future of card readers. You know, it's the faster card standard or something like that. SD card is by far the most common, so it makes sense. But I'm disappointed that we didn't get maybe an Apple one-upsmanship there.
Why do you think they went back on the ports? Because the idea with going USB-C / Thunderbolt 4 for everything was eventually everything will run over those ports, power, display, everything. What made them go back and say, well, people still need HDMI ports. People still need SD cards. People actually liked MagSafe. That's a very unusual thing for Apple to do, is to change their mind and go back and bring something back like that.
I think it's what you mentioned before, where they're kind of catering this new laptop to videographers and to photographers. I think they realize that if this is who they're going to kind of make their core audience for this new device, they got to make sure they have enough ports for people to be able to plug in their cameras or their lighting or microphone or whatever the case they may need. They need to give folks the reason to say, I need to get this because now I can use all of my peripherals that I need to do this job I'm doing.
Yeah, especially if you're going to tout all the video qualities of the chips, you know, the graphics, you know, all the speed and, you know, the bandwidth. You know, I guess if, like Nika said, if they're going to cater this towards photographers, I guess they got to have that slot to stick their SD card in.
Yeah. Well, and it did seem for a while that Apple was veering towards consumer with prosumer at the top end, and these feel very much like they're for professionals. Mm-hmm. They are for prosumers and professionals. And so you may be right. Well, folks, what do you think? Why do you think they did it? Do you like these? Do you not like them? Feedback at DailyTechNewsShow.com. Let us know what you think.
All right. We want to give a special thanks to Michelle Sirju, who is one of our top lifetime supporters of DTNS. We really appreciate all those years of support. Yay. And we also want to thank Terrence Gaines and Nika Montford for being on the show. It's an Apple Day, so of course we had to have them on the show. Guys, where can we find more of your great stuff if we are so inclined? Terrence?
Yeah, sure. You can find me on all the social medias at Brother Tech, and you can go to my website, brothertech.com.
And you can find me at Tech Savvy Diva everywhere in the social media space. You can find our show Twitter at SnobOSCast. We're at SnobOSCast everywhere as well.
All right. We are live Monday through Friday at 4:30 p.m. Eastern, 20:30 UTC. Find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live. We'll be back tomorrow with Lamar Wilson. See you then.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Hi, this is Janice Torres from Yo Quiero Dinero. From a local business to a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America gives your operation access to exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America N.A. Copyright 2024.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.